Welcome to Faculty Insight, brought to you by Harvard Extension School in partnership with ThoughtCast. I'm Jenny Atiyah, and I'm speaking with Shelley Carson, an associate of Harvard University's Department of Psychology, a lecturer at Harvard Extension School, and also a blogger at The Huffington Post and Psychology Today. Shelley, one of your academic focuses is on the connection between psychopathology and creativity. And the term psychopathology sounds like a disease I don't want to catch. So first of all, what is it? And why is it connected to something as glamorous and sought after as creativity?
Well, psychopathology is actually the study of mental illness. So it comes from psycho, which means mind, and pathology, which means illness. And there has been a connection ever since the time of the Greeks between high levels of creativity and strange behavior and actions. So for instance, Plato suggested that poets, philosophers, and playwrights suffered from what he termed divine madness, which was a madness that was given to them by the gods, but madness nevertheless. And Aristotle suggested that there was a connection between poets and melancholia, which is what we call today depression.
So in general, creative people are going to be just less happy than the rest of us?
In general, they may have a greater risk for certain types of psychopathology than the rest of us. We're all creative, but it seems that there may be some underlying predispositions that are common to both creativity and certain types of psychopathology.
Now, if people who are creative have a tendency to be more depressed than the average person, I find that odd because happiness is often derived from being creative, mm-hmm. from doing things that are valuable and challenging and have meaning.
So we have two different theories going on here. One is by the humanists, for instance, Abraham Maslow or Carl Rogers, who suggests that creativity is the highest pinnacle of self-actualization, and it's really part of positive mental health. On the other hand, we have some research that suggests that creative people may be at greater risk for certain types of mood disorders, in particular bipolar disorder. They also seem to have a greater rate of what's called psychosis proneness, which is sort of a pre-psychotic situation, and they have greater rates of alcoholism and drug abuse as well.
Shelley, I've read that writers are up to 10 times more likely to suffer from depression and to commit suicide. Why is that?
Well, there is a higher rate of suicide amongst especially certain types of writers, such as poets, for instance.
Female poets in particular.
Female poets. Well, in general, females are twice as likely to be diagnosed with depression as males are. So their rate is up to 25% as a lifetime risk, whereas for males it's around 12%.
So is it better to be a great artist and miserable, or a happy person and not terribly important?
I think the greatest thing you can do is to follow your creative propensities and take your chances on the mental illness. But I also would like to emphasize that most highly creative people do not have mental illness. So we're talking about a greater risk, but it keeps it below 50%.
David Foster Wallace, a novelist who killed himself recently. I was shocked. I really felt, how could someone with so much talent go out early? How could he miss the chance to self-actualize?
William Styron wrote a beautiful book about his own depressive episode and his own thoughts of suicide that I think would really help explain what's going on in the mind of the novelist or the writer. And Styron's expose of this is very, very poignant.
If creative people are more likely to be depressed, do they have the ability to work while they're depressed, or do they have to wait until they feel better to get anything done?
Well, there's a lot of research that's been done on when in the cycle of depression, or if we're talking about bipolar illness, when in the cycle of bipolar illness people are their most creative. Kay Jamison has done some research on the correlation between creative productivity and mood. And what she's found is that when people's mood is on the rise, that's when they tend to be most creative. And that happens at two different times in a bipolar cycle. For instance, when you're on the way up from a depressive episode to normalcy, and then again from normalcy into a hypomanic mood. And this correlates with greater creative productivity.
Apparently, Schumann did his composing when he was manic. Is great art possibly the result of a mental illness?
Well, again, people like Kay Jamison suggest that there are certain symptoms that actually promote creativity. So, for instance, if we look at symptoms of hypomania, sometimes people report greater mental clarity. They'll say, oh, I feel like the cobwebs have been removed from my mind. They also have a greater activation of associational networks, so that one idea leads to another, to another, to another. This is referred to as the flight of ideas. And if we think about creativity as being the ability to connect pieces of information together in novel and original ways, then having this hyperactivation of associational networks might improve one's ability to be creative.
Shelley Carson, you have a new book out. It's called Your Creative Brain, 7 Steps to Maximize Imagination, Productivity, and Innovation in Your Life. And the premise is, as far as I can tell, that everyone can become more creative. It's not just the province of the creative types if people practice the 7 steps, apply themselves.
Right. So when I first started studying creativity about 13 years ago, I agreed with the idea that there were creative people and then there were less creative people. Then there were the rest of us. And as I continued to study, I really changed my mind and realized that all of us have this wonderful creativity machine, our brains. And if we train it properly, we can all be highly creative. Well, we're basically built to be creative.
Some of the literature implies that there's a strong correlation between being creative and being introspective, ruminative, and that there's a correlation between being ruminative and being depressed. And I'm thinking about people who are just uncomfortable examining the self. Mm-hmm. Are those types in need of some of your creative exercises? Do they need to try those 7 steps?
Well, we all have an inner world, and some people are afraid of their inner worlds. They don't want to spend much time there. And they're much more comfortable reading about other people's inner worlds or texting or tweeting or all the other things that we spend all of our spare time doing these days. But your inner world not only is an examination of yourself, but an examination of all things that you think are possible. So one of the things that I think is very important for people who are learning to be more creative is to get the focus of their inner world off themselves and imagine other aspects of potentiality. So you can dream up new worlds, you can dream up fictional characters. Your inner world doesn't just have to be all about examining yourself.
That explains a lot. I mean, why fiction rather than autobiography?
Mm-hmm. Well, indeed, if you think about where your mind goes when you are not consciously focusing your attention, it usually goes back to yourself and self-rumination. And we do know from studies that the more you ruminate, the more likely it is you are to be depressed. So it can actually lead to this kind of downward spiral of depression. But if you train your mind to think about other things when you're not consciously focused, so if you're building a character in your mind, or you're building a plot of a novel in your mind, or you're going to a garden and you can imagine being in a garden in your mind, all of these are ways that we can use our creativity and our creative tools to begin to imagine things that don't exist, but that could be potentially creative.
What about creativity and drugs? There are a few romantic poets who were known to write brilliantly when under the influence.
Indeed, and alcohol as well. If we look at, for instance, American writers and alcohol, we see that out of our 8 Nobel Prize winning authors, 5 of them were diagnosed alcoholics. So there does seem to be a tendency to drink.
Are creative people usually also ambitious? In addition to the need to create, is there also a need for recognition, reward?
In some people there is, but in other people there isn't. So if we look at somebody like Emily Dickinson, for instance, she never wanted anyone to know about her work and she hid it in a bureau drawer. Other people desire the limelight, if we think of people like Andy Warhol. So there are a lot of people that crave attention, other people that don't. I think the ambition side is the ambition to continue to work and to create in spite of all odds. Sometimes that's associated with a need to be recognized, sometimes it isn't.
I'm thinking about Walt Whitman. I celebrate myself. That guy was rather full of himself. Is that helpful to creativity, to succeeding in writing or creating art?
There is an ego element to creativity. If you think about what the creator does, basically they are introducing change into the world. And whenever you introduce change, as we know, people are very resistant to change in general. They like what they already have. So when you introduce change, you're likely to be criticized. And you have to have a pretty strong sense of yourself to be able to weather that criticism and continue going forward in spite of it.
Shelley Carson, is it possible to be a miserable success, to be an artist who's selling, who is recognized, who's succeeding, and yet depressed?
I know several. Yes, I'd say it's definitely possible.
What are they miserable about?
Well, depression, sometimes you can't pinpoint the cause. Sometimes people get into creative work because they want to explore existential problems. And what is the cause of human misery? And they want to explore that, and so they will get into different art forms, such as painting or writing. It was really interesting. I was giving an interview a couple of days ago over at the Harvard ISDN studio, and I used the ladies' room beforehand, and there was a cartoon on the door. And it was a couple of inventors standing over these robots that they had made. And it said, the robots have now discovered self-actualization and self-loathing. All they do is write novels now.
So, right. Shelley Carson, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you for inviting me, Jenny.
Our pleasure. You've been listening to Faculty Insight, brought to you by Harvard Extension School in partnership with ThoughtCast. I'm Jenny Attia. Thanks for joining us.